Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, before we talk to Sir John Redwood, Conservative MP, of course, for Wokingham, let's just have a listen to Grant Shapps, the Secretary of State for Transport, on what he said about calling people back from Portugal.
This is a difficult decision. I understand that, you know, we are all desperate to see the world return to normal. That can only happen through the domestic unlock first. We all look towards the 21st of June to see what can be done and the data. And we simply don't want to put that at risk through these figures, as we've seen in Portugal, both the doubling of the positivity rate that we've seen and also this mutation, the so-called Nepal mutation on the so-called Indian variant, which could then cause us problems down the line. So safety first to get our unlock done. Yes, so the support for the travel industry, who goodness knows have suffered throughout this crisis, is ongoing. We've got £7 billion worth of support, which is still being paid out right now, including through the furlough scheme. Look, what I want to do with today's difficult but I hope decisive action is make sure that we protect the future by not restarting problems which may or may not be there at home. We'll be able to get international travel down the line opened more quickly. So it's a sort of safety first approach, which I see that Gatwick and others have said is an understandable approach.
So this was less than a couple of weeks ago. The Nepal variant, anybody remember that? The Indian variant, which is now called the variant that originated in India. He said, quite clearly, as did many government ministers at the time, the reason for telling people that quarantine was going to be effective as of 3 days from now, coming back from Portugal, was to safeguard the domestic opening of the economy. Quite clearly said that the reason for telling people to cut short their holidays in Portugal, to pay loads of money to come back, and to effectively put themselves into hock as a result to avoid quarantine was to safeguard the opening of all restrictions on June the 21st. It now looks like they're not going to do that. So if you went to Portugal, if you were forced to pay loads of money to come back early, I think there's only one answer. Get yourself a lawyer and sue Grant Shapps right now, personally. Let's talk to Sir John Redwood. John, very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
I'm very upset this morning, John, because I don't like being lied to. I don't like being played for a patsy. And I don't like the government shilly-shallying around with people's livelihoods. What do you reckon?
Well, I'm on the side of more freedom, as I think you know. And I've made that case many times. And I've sometimes voted against measures the government was bringing in. I'm still urging them before they make their final decision and announce it this week to take into account livelihoods, the economy, to take into account the way the vaccines seem to be working extremely well, to take into account the other strategy I've always favoured rather more, which is doing the maximum to protect all those who are most at risk of the serious disease. The vaccine is pretty good protection, but if anybody can't be vaccinated or if they're still worried about the residual risk with the vaccine, there are ways that we can support them so that they can limit their number of social contacts. But I don't think it means the whole of the rest of the country should be doing that.
No, of course. But how many more times are we going to have the same conversation, Sir John? Because at the end of the day, you know, we were told categorically that June the 21st was being protected because that was the most important thing for the economy. And I agree with that. And that was why people who were on holiday in Portugal and people who had booked holidays in Portugal were told that Portugal was now considered to be a dangerous place and you should come back early. Now, if that didn't mean anything, why did they bother saying it?
Well, I think in fairness to them, they always said that this was an indicative timetable, but they would be data driven right up to the decision point. And the bad news is that the data they look at is clearly deteriorating in the way they didn't want. So let us wait and see what they actually say. I'm still hoping that there will be some relaxations in addition to the ones we already enjoy. And if they really want an extension, I hope it will be a very flexible time extension with constant recourse to the data so that as soon as it's better, we can get out of this thing. But I would also ask them, are you looking at the right data? Yes, there's quite a big increase in cases, but if these aren't serious cases, if these aren't people who are going to end up in an intensive care bed, is it so much of a worry? Can't we carry on with the relaxation? And can't we leave it to all of us to make a decision about how much risk we want to run? If I'm absolutely terrified about catching something, I won't go to a party. If I want a more normal life, I'll go to my office to do my work there rather than doing it at home.
Exactly right. And the data, frankly, does not point in any way, shape or form to a dangerous situation. You know, they can tell us that they think it does, but we know that it doesn't. Because any number of scientists will tell you and me and anybody else who cares to listen that the number of cases is not the same as the number of hospitalizations. The number of infections is what they're talking about. And that's not even correct, because all this is, when they say daily coronavirus cases 7,490, all that is tests that have come back positive. It doesn't even mean that there's a case. It doesn't even mean that all of those people are ill.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, some people have a positive test and the test is wrong. Some people have a positive test and they never have any symptoms. They've technically got the disease, but it doesn't trouble them. And then some people do discover they've actually got the disease with symptoms. And we trust that very few of those now get the serious version of the disease, particularly the ones who've been vaccinated seem to have pretty high protection against the disease at all, and certainly against a serious version of it. So the government should give that more weight. And I'm just hoping that at this very last minute, after all this comprehensive briefing, there's somebody in the room making the case for jobs, livelihoods, for individuals making more of their own choices. Because above all, I want us to be treated as more responsible adults. And by all means, Sage and the medics set out the facts and warn us about how our conduct could be unhelpful to others and so forth, and then leave us to make more judgments. Because I think some people are already doing that. Some people are already bending or breaking the rules. You need to keep consent in a democracy. And I do think normally you have to treat voters as adults capable of listening to evidence and coming to their own conclusions.
Yeah. Well, Andrew Lloyd Webber, for one, Sir John, has said that he will open his theatres come what may, whether or not the government allows him to, on the 21st of June. Now, he says they can arrest him if they want, but he's going to do that. Now, if somebody as esteemed a businessman as Andrew Lloyd Webber is willing to put his entire business on the line, he's mortgaged his house, you know, he knows that he can't make money unless there's 75% and up in terms of occupancy of his theatres. He is willing to go to jail for this. You know, does that not tell Boris Johnson that he's got this wrong?
Well, it's certainly a powerful lobby. I would urge him not to break the law. As a lawmaker, I feel it's very incumbent on me to say the thing to do if you don't like the law is to get us to change the law, not to break it. And it would be a very sad day if a great entrepreneur flouted the law in a way which he ended up in prison. That's not going to help his business. But I understand his passion. I mean, I think a lot of people want to go to events and live entertainment again. There must be relatively safe ways of doing that. Now we have the vaccine as a major option.
Well, not only are there safe ways of doing it, but there have been trials done, John, which have shown that nobody actually got infected once the trial was done. Once people went into nightclubs, once people went into theatres. It's not like he's asking for a free-for-all. He's saying he's quite happy for people to have to take a test before they are admitted.
Yeah.
But then he can admit people and they can sit and sit next to each other, having proven that they don't have COVID.
Yeah, all of that. And also anybody who is still very nervous about this thing, don't go to a nightclub. I mean, that's where freedom of choice comes in.
Well, there's lots of bad things that can happen in a nightclub, John. And I mean, if you don't like nightclubs, just, you know, if you're an anxious person, you're probably not wise to go there in the first place.
No, so we leave it more to personal choice, in my view. And there's been so much about all this now, and a lot of evidence has been put out there. And the doctors don't all agree with each other. The people who study disease often get their forecasts wrong. So the public will come to their own judgments, and they've got plenty of information available if they are nervous and they want to check it out.
Isn't there a problem here with the Tory party, though, John? I mean, you're a veteran, without wishing to in any way suggest that you've been doing it for a long time, but you have. You've seen many prime ministers come and go.
Well, I'm trying to get better at it, Mike.
Well, so do we all. So do we all. But the point is that, you know, the Tories are in grave danger here for me. I mean, they don't have any opposition. So Keir Starmer is worthless, useless, hopeless, right? And they haven't really got anybody else that can do a better job than him anyway. But you know, this kind of goodwill of the nation that Boris was given with the 80-seat majority back in December of 2019 is in a lot of danger, I think, because, you know, people are getting more and more fed up. They've done what they were told. They've listened to the promises and they've seen them broken time after time after time. And you know as well as I do, in the end, you can't just keep breaking promises.
No, but I think also you do have to have some sympathy for the Prime Minister. I mean, I back the Prime Minister. I wanted him to replace Theresa May, and he's done a much better job on getting us out of the EU than she was ever going to do. And that was
And he's done that magnificently. And I still support him in that. But when you see what was going on.
So then when he gets a pandemic crisis, global crisis, not of his choosing. And nobody knew how to handle it at the beginning. They didn't really know very much about the disease. They didn't know whether they got any drugs that would work. They had to work hard to get some vaccines. Like governments all around the world, there was quite a lot of trial and error and waiting for the research and the information to catch up.
Yes.
But I think now, yes, it's very important we get as many people back to work as quickly as possible and as many of our freedoms to be entertained as possible. And I do think there may be something seasonal in this disease. And last summer, it seemed to wane quite a bit. And ultraviolet light and so forth is meant to be pretty hostile to the virus. So, again, you would think that the weather at last is on our side. And it allows you to have more outside events as well. So can't we enjoy it a bit more?
Well, yes. Stay with us, if you would, John. We're just going to take a little break and we'll be back with Sir John Redwood after this on Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio. Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We're talking to Sir John Redwood, Conservative MP, of course, for Wokingham. John, my worry is here, right, and thank you very much for waiting around, is that this will go on forever. Because every single time they've told us, oh, we'll just have another couple of weeks here, another month there, you know, what guarantees can you offer us that, you know, if we are going to be put off for 4 weeks from June the 21st, that will eventually be the right date?
Well, I trust the government will see sense in the way that you and I do and will want to end all this, because the parliamentary situation is very clear, Mike, that there's a group of us on the Conservative side who wants to vote for faster relaxation, but none of the opposition parties do. And if the government doesn't want to, then we're a small minority. But we're there trying to persuade the government that we need to go faster and get into these relaxations. I think you made another very interesting point in your opening remarks when you were talking about how people in power need to live the brand and accept their own guidance. And for example, I've been saying, with this huge green conference coming up in Glasgow in November, does it make sense to fly hundreds of people all around the world into Glasgow to then lecture the rest of us that we shouldn't have any international jet travel? Mm. I think there will be quite a lot of adverse comment about all that. So I think people who presume to tell us how to lead our lives have to bear that in mind when they lead their lives.
Yes. Well, President Joe Biden, I understand, is trying to encourage Americans to give up their cars, which I'm sure, as you know as well as I do, Americans will not do very readily, probably not without having to have their guns grasped away from them as well. But he then takes Air Force One from Cornwall to Windsor. And you're kind of going, really? You couldn't go any other way?
No, it's bizarre. And the whole Green Revolution, which is very much a top-down revolution, the governments of the world assembled to tell us to do it, just as they did again at the G7, is only going to take off, Mike. It's only going to work if there are popular goods and services that are better and better value that the public wants to buy. Because they're talking about all of us. And unless we want to scrap the diesel car and we want to rip out the gas boiler and we want to stop using private transport, it's not going to happen. So they've got to work with us and understand what would be better and cheaper for us.
No, exactly right. And that seems to be the bit that they that passes them by. And there is, I think, this is part of what I suppose I'm talking about when I say the people of this country have fed up and they've had enough, is they don't look at the parliamentary representatives that they have and they and see someone like them. They see somebody who appears to be relatively privileged, somebody who appears to be pretty well off, somebody who hasn't been damaged at all by the pandemic and by the lockdown, and somebody who perhaps doesn't really understand ordinary people's lives.
No, that's the danger. And the lockdown and COVID, trust is a one-off, and it's an illustration of problems. But I think the Green Revolution, which I want to come back to, is in a way more significant because it's going to be with us for years. All these governments are very determined, and I want to strongly send a very strong message to them to say, you can only lead people in this direction if the people themselves are going to get something out of it. If they don't feel there's a privileged class that have chauffeur-driven limos and fly around in jets, whilst telling the rest of us we shouldn't use cars or jets at all. Now, I think public are very understanding. They know that people have great responsibilities. They need more assistance with their travel. And I don't begrudge at all prime ministers and presidents using smart cars and private jets and all that kind of thing. And they work in them and on them. And that's all very good. But it's very difficult. They then turn around to the rest of us and say, you can't have your family car at all.
Or alternatively, John, if you're working and you need a van, which unfortunately, because you're not a multi-millionaire, is 12 or 13 years old, we're going to charge you upwards of 40 quid to get into London for the day to do the work that makes you maybe £100 a day if you're lucky.
Yeah, and we're going to close most of the roads to your van so that you're going to sit in a traffic jam. So instead of doing two or three jobs a day, you end up doing only one or something. Or you decide it's not worth it.
Yeah.
And London will be less well-serviced. The more the mayor closes down, the more all those tradespeople just outside London who would otherwise have driven in and done something will say, I can't be bothered with the hassle. I've got the fee to come in. I can't find any parking. I sit in a traffic jam. I should be working somewhere where I can make some money.
Exactly. So what are you guys prepared to do if the news later on today at 6 o'clock at the press conference is that we are now going to stay where we are? And I appreciate that it's not fully in a lockdown, that there are things we can do. However, there are businesses that need to reopen properly. There are businesses that need to be able to make money properly. What are you going to say to the Prime Minister if that's what is the case?
Well, we will look at what he said. We'll look at his evidence. And then if we don't agree with him, we'll carry on making the case to something better and different, Mike. But I've got to be level with you and your audience. We can't change this because all the opposition parties have already signed up for extending lockdown as long as the government wishes. And so the government has an inbuilt majority of several hundred on this thing, not just 80.
I know, but, you know, that was what we were told they had on Brexit as well, and we managed to break that one. Do you remember that? When they said, oh, but the bulk of Parliament doesn't want to leave the European Union. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, well, that took a change of personnel through a very good election result where the British public were made to vote yet again for Brexit because the Parliament wouldn't believe the original vote, which I thought was a disgrace.
But let's not forget that lesson, though, and let's not think that nothing can change just because there's a big parliamentary majority, because it can.
Oh, no, of course it can, and I'm not a defeatist. I think you know that.
I do.
Quite a few knocks to the things I believe in over the years, but you carry on. But all I'm saying to you and your audience is all that I and my friends can do is just keep making the case. Because on something like COVID regulations, we're very unlikely to win a vote.
Yeah. OK. So, John Redwood, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk to us, Conservative MP for Wokingham, a man who does stand by his principles, a man who is unusually right and continues to be right about his views, right? But here's the thing. I don't believe for a second that Boris Johnson has any intention whatsoever of changing the way that he runs this country, i.e. for the rest of time, he's going to get these sage maniacs telling him what he can and cannot do. On the front page of the Daily Telegraph today, here's how many people have died from COVID in the last 24 hours. 8.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I'm fed up to the back teeth of being told what we can and cannot do, when we can and cannot do it, with whom we can and cannot do it, and where we can and cannot do it. I would quite like to go away. I would quite like to take my children on holiday. I would quite like to go and see my mother in America. I would quite like to see my daughter in Dubai. I can't see any of those people. I'd like to see my son who lives in California. You know, you might say, oh, lucky old you, you've got kids that live all over the world. You know, that's not because they wanted to move away from me either, by the way, before you say anything else. The point is this, pub owners would like to be able to fill their pubs with people. People who work in the restaurant business would like to have their restaurants full. People who run theatres only make money if they've got a 75 to 80% occupancy rate in the theatre. People in the music business would like to go back to playing music. They'd like to go back to hiring thousands and thousands of people and charging money so that people can go on stage and perform. People in football stadiums would like to be able to actually sit next to one another. People would like to fill Wembley Stadium for England and versus Scotland. People would actually enjoy going to a full Albert Hall to watch Eric Clapton play. By the way, who happens to be a big fan of Talk Radio. We'll tell you more about that later on. But let us talk now to Greg Mulholland, Campaign Director for the Campaign for Pubs and Chairman of the Pub Confederation. Greg, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
I mean, I say good morning, but you know, I'm actually quite peed off this morning. I'm quite angry. I've just had enough, really. I mean, I can't imagine how you feel.
Well, I think you express a feeling that many people feel, but certainly many publicans. But also, I think we had the sense last week of where this was going, and you know, once again getting dithering, once again getting the sense that things would unlock, then they wouldn't. And the impact actually, not just on profitability, not just on customer confidence, which still is nowhere near where it needs to be to get pubs back on their feet, but actually the mental health of our nation's publicans is a very, very serious issue. And that's on top of having to deal with things like table service, which increase costs, have to have many more staff.
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, as one of our leading members said this morning in a message, this is about the worst time because we're about to see, you know, unfortunately, landlords are now looking for full rent, despite the fact that businesses are still not trading anywhere near normally. Mm. You've got business rates coming up. You've got The bounce back loans that now have to be paid back very shortly, even though how you know businesses haven't bounced back. So there are things that I'm afraid don't add up. But it's a deeply, deeply worrying time. And this, I'm afraid, is a very depressing day for pubs and publicans.
Isn't it just? Yeah. And what's the story with bounce back loans then? Are they on a time basis? Are they on a sort of 12-month, you know, arrival date or something?
Yeah, so they've got to start being paid back in a matter of weeks, despite the fact, as I say, the businesses are not back to normal. Now, that was not the basis on which they were offered. So people took them on the basis that they would be trading normally again. And that, you know, who could have foreseen where we got to now? But that is not the case. So one of the things that we're urgently calling for is for the government to delay that at least another 6 months, because people cannot be paying loans back when they haven't bounced back. And that's one of our key messages.
No, well, they haven't made any money. They had no revenue. I mean, I'm told in the theatre business, for example, and I'm sure it's the same for you guys in hospitality, that unless they've got a 75 to 80% occupancy rate in the theatre, they're not making any money.
Yes, well, certainly our publican members are reporting, you know, like for like, and obviously we're not comparing last year, we're comparing the previous years, you know, takings down probably anywhere from, if you're lucky, maybe only down 70%, but many pubs are reporting probably down 50%, down half. So that's just not sustainable. And I think that the really heartbreaking thing is that, you know, we went through that very bizarre, in our view, unnecessary outdoor only opening in April. But you saw the efforts that pubs and publicans made to get their pubs open, to create new outdoor areas, to serve people outside, which was a big challenge, but they did it. Then they had the indoor opening, but with restrictions, but with table service, not being able to order at the bar. Again, unfair on pubs because you're allowed to do that in cafes. But it was all based on the idea that by the 21st of June, finally, just as we get to the crucial summertime, pubs could open again normally. And now that's been taken away, it seems clearly, I'm afraid, from the reports today. And that's really is quite, it's devastating for the sustainability of pubs, and it's devastating for the mental health of those who work in them.
And it seems so unfair, Greg, because, I mean, you know as well as I do, without giving away the game, there are plenty of pubs that have been open since May the 17th, which have actually had quite a lot of people in them. in the sense that they could have been outside, but they were quite close together. I mean, I drove past a couple of pubs last night in South London where they were all sitting outside, but they were very close to one another, and they were under a sort of canopy. Now, for all intents and purposes, you might as well be inside because the circulation of air is not much different, to be fair. And there's no evidence whatsoever that people are getting sick as a result of that.
Yes, I mean, once again, as we saw last year when pubs opened in England on the 4th of July, you know, there just hasn't been a spike.
No.
There hasn't been a spike caused by it. Clearly, there are other things that have caused issues, and we're aware of those. But that's against the backdrop of having so many people vaccinated. Mm. You know, that is a triumph. That's a huge success, and credit to all those involved in that. But that should be allowing us to get back to normal life. Normal life in our pubs, and also, as you say, normal life in our theatres, our nightclubs. Nightclub owners will be absolutely desolate, because, you know, they are now facing not being able to open when they've been planning to open for the first time today. So, yes, you know, and people saying, oh, well, it's only another 4 weeks. Well, those people are not, and frankly, people who are going through the loss of income and livelihood that many people in hospitality and in pubs are. So I'm afraid it's rather easy to say that when your salary isn't affected. But when it is, and when your whole future is on the line, when a successful pub is now on the brink because you still are not trading profitably, then I'm afraid 4 weeks can make all the difference, and that's our big worry. So the government, if the government's going to make this four-week delay, the government needs to offer more support to stop the charging of full rents, to delay business rates another 6 months, and to delay the paying of bounce back loans. It can't just make these decisions as if they don't have an impact, because they do.
And how many of your members would you say, Greg, off the top of your head, would be so looking forward to June 21st, because perhaps they haven't even opened yet because they're too small, or they have no outside business really to speak of, you know, and this was really going to be their payday for the first time. I mean, are there lots of pubs like that?
That's right. I mean, it's a small proportion not yet open, but it's still a significant proportion. And you are talking, you know, several thousand pubs in the, you know, certainly in England, have not yet opened. And they were planning to open, as you say, once they were able to do so. Some of them simply being too small to operate profitably at all. So, yeah, another blow for them, uncertainty. They probably were putting beer orders in last week and then, you know, now it's all been crushed again. They will have to pour more beer down the sink. They'll have to cancel staff rotas. You know, that's the impact every time we have this sort of dithering and delay. And in the end, you know, we have the vaccination levels. Surely we have to get to the stage where we accept that we have to live alongside this horrible disease the way we do with flu, the way we do with other things, you know, and get back to some sort of normality. And certainly that is so important that it happens as soon as possible for pubs. But
yes,
it's regrettable it's not happening today.
And there is some suggestion that they might sort of hold out a bit of an olive branch to people having weddings, you know, so that they can have more than 30 people at a wedding. Surely if they can do that, then there's no real logic for not doing lots of other things, is there?
Yeah, that's right. We actually wrote a letter, which you can see on our Twitter page and our website, on Friday, because it was clear what the mood music was and that we were going to be hit with yet another delay. So our key demand in terms of restrictions is to stop discriminating against pubs and allow people to order at the bar. If you go into a Costa coffee or a cafe anywhere, you can order a coffee at the counter at the bar. I mean, I went to a motorway service station when I was able to.
Yeah, they seem to be exempt, don't they?
And they're big queues, huge big queues in there. And yet people are not allowed to simply order, not even order at the bar, never mind stand the drink at the bar. They can't even order at the bar. And that increases staff costs. It's putting huge pressure on publicans. We've written to the Scottish government about it. We've written to the UK government about it. But they need to drop that and stop that imposition, because there's no evidence that table service has any impact, is any safer in any way. So it's just unreasonable. So even if we don't get the full unlocking, which is clearly not going to happen, we really would hope that the government might consider that, though I'm afraid we're not holding out much hope because the government, frankly, doesn't seem to listen.
No, I mean, you could argue the opposite if you wanted to. I'm sure you could find a scientist down the road today who would say, if you've got Perspex screens at a bar and you've got a little hole where they pass you the pint, that's a lot safer, actually, than somebody walking up to you at a table.
Well, that was exactly our argument. That was our position. We felt it was actually putting staff at risk. And of course, many pub staff are younger, many pub staff under 30, not vaccinated yet, and yet they're having to go to tables and interact fairly closely with customers. Whereas you say, if you have Perspex screens, as you do in cafes, shops, and indeed we did see them in some pubs last year, you know, that clearly to us must be safer. It's extraordinary. It's one of the examples of prejudice. It's let's be prejudiced against pubs and have one rule for pubs.
Yeah.
We've had too much of that over the last year. People are sick of it.
Maybe you should just open a pub down in Carbis Bay, Greg, because apparently there's no COVID down there. You can fly in from any part of the world. You can hug people. You can kiss people. You can dance around. You can put your arms around people. And nobody's bothered.
Perhaps a bit far to get the beer to travel and settle, though, I imagine. So, we want to help our brewers as well.
Well, you know, they do make it down there. It's not the ends of the earth. But listen, Greg, I have great sympathy for you. And I'm sorry, I'm not being flippant. But, you know, we're all so fed up with it. I'm ready to punch somebody, I tell you. Absolutely unbelievable. Greg, thanks for talking to us. Greg Mulholland, Campaign Director for the Campaign for Pubs, Chairman of the Pub Confederation. I mean, the way things are going with this more right government and their ridiculous policy on lockdown, we're going to end up with no pubs. There will be none. There won't be anything left. These people can't make any money. Do you have any idea what that's like? Have you any idea how depressing it is to wake up every morning and worry that you don't have any money, that you have debts that you can't pay, that people are going to come and repossess your car, people are going to come and repossess the chairs and the tables in your establishment because you can't make any money? Listen to this, Boris, for heaven's sake, man.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Time to say a very good morning to Peter Hitchens, who I'm hoping will be a calming influence on me today. Peter, a very good morning to you.
Morning.
I'm not normally an angry person, but I feel quite angry today, Peter. What can I do?
Well, I can't be bothered to be angry.
I know.
we discussed this months ago.
Yeah.
I said, do you know what? They'll find a new variant and then they'll postpone it. And I was absolutely right. And they have. And,
yeah.
and they can actually do this indefinitely. But if you think about this, they're behaving as if the thing which they themselves have trumpeted incessantly for months, the vaccination of millions of people, starting quite rightly with the most vulnerable, they're behaving as if it hadn't happened. It's as if some lottery winner wins billions of pounds and buys himself a Maserati and then decides to go round and round and round in an old banger and refuses to drive the Maserati. What is wrong with them? Either this was worth doing, either it had some point and the whole thing was the achievement they've said it is, or it wasn't. If it was the achievement they said it was, then what the fundamental reason for all the restrictions which has been advanced, I mean, I don't myself accept it, but let's get inside the logic of these people now and assume for the purposes of argument they might be right. The fundamental purpose from the start was supposedly to save the National Health Service from being overwhelmed. And once you have successfully vaccinated with an effective vaccine, almost all the people who are most likely to be vulnerable and who would indeed overwhelm the NHS if they all fell ill, then those circumstances no longer apply. So why is it that the existence of a new variant, which spreads slightly more quickly than the old variant, is the reason for postponing something which was set back in February at a time when the Prime Minister's so-called said that you can't just go on shutting down forever and ever and ever. There is no possibility, I think he said in his February 22nd speech, of zero COVID. Why is he acting as if he's trying to obtain zero COVID before he can open up the country? All this stuff about Mr. Johnson being some sort of libertarian anxious to free us from our shackles doesn't seem to me to add up. There's no sign in all the briefings and leaks we've heard of anybody in this government saying, come on, the time has come to, if not now, when?
Yeah.
The time has come to say goodbye to all this rubbish and let the country go again. You get occasional hints. Even on the BBC this morning, there was a couple of business owners, and they said basically if it hadn't been for furlough, they'd have gone bankrupt. And even with, as you were just saying, the levels of opening that we have, most of these businesses are not making enough money to sustain themselves or to employ people. It's they can just about keep the lights on. It's like a ship that's got enough power in the engines to keep the lights on in the lounge, but not to actually make the ship move forward.
Right.
Until you actually open up properly, the economy doesn't start again. And during all that time, the funny money continues to be manufactured. And that funny money is going to come back in the form. Everybody is now recognizing this. I was the first to say it, and people, I was derided by the fashionable economists. It's going to come back in the form of inflation, which is going to be very, very serious for an awful lot of people, for the economy as a whole, and for the value of the pound sterling abroad. And we're going to pay for it for years and years and years in lower living standards and higher taxes and poorer services. And still we have this ridiculous, unacknowledged disaster of the health service actually being overwhelmed by backlogs. That people not getting the cancer screening they should be having, not getting the treatments they should be having, waiting months for appointments, which before all this began, they would have waited weeks or even days for. It's just not being examined. And the furlough money continues to pour out. We can't just go on doing this as if it was a trouble-free, risk-free, danger-free, damage-free option. Every week we continue doing this, we do more fundamental damage. It's just every hour that a heart attack goes untreated or a stroke goes untreated, it does deeper damage to the heart and the brain.
Yes. Well, this is the thing. And they talk about cautious approach and they talk about, you know, safety first. But there's nothing cautious about throwing everything else out the window while maintaining your hold on the one table that you seem to think is of some use to you.
That is precisely the point. And the people who are giving this advice, and this point has been made again and again, they have nothing to lose, the advisors, by saying don't relax. Because they're not accountable to the people in any way. The only thing they're accountable to is the risk that if they're right about all this, that more people will die. If they're wrong and more people don't die, then no one will turn around to them and say, actually, you've got this wrong, and you should be subjected to huge amounts of abuse, the sort of abuse that you and I have had to endure for being skeptical about this over the past few months. Yeah. Nothing of that kind ever happens, and they're safe either way.
Except more people are except Peter, that more people are dying, but they're just not dying of COVID, which apparently doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a time when I spent a lot of effort going into all that. But a few months ago, I realized that outside a very small minority of educated, rational thinking people, there really wasn't any point. I think at the moment, one has to put these things very, very crudely to a society which appears to more or less become uneducated and irrational. The damage is worse if we don't let up. The shutdown has done a huge amount of damage, which will continue to be done as long as it goes on. And on its own terms, it's time that the government relaxed the rules because on its own terms, the vaccine program has been successful. They have done what they said they would do. The vaccines work. Millions of people in the most vulnerable categories of the population are not going to fall seriously ill. The hospitals can cope. So why don't we open up?
Exactly. I think one of the reasons I'm more irritated this morning than I am normally is because of what I saw at the weekend with all these ludicrous, you know, G7 world leaders, all of whom are on the public payroll, all of whom seem to think that they're no better than everybody else, all of whom seem to be having a very nice time, thank you very much indeed, without doing very much of the things that they tell us to do all the time. And we're paying for it.
Well, yes, these boondoggles are ridiculous. I've never seen any purpose whatsoever in any of these G7s or G8s or G1s.
Well, nothing's come out of it, I can tell. It's worth a fag end, is it?
The basic purpose of summits for the observant is to demonstrate to anybody who hadn't realised it already that the police claims to have a shortage of manpower.
There was literally a boatload full of them, 6,000 of them on a boat in the anchored off the coast on a cruise ship. And normally there's 20 of them. This was 6,000.
Well, I hope they had a nice time. I hope they did. The thing made me laugh most was some reporters standing in Cornwall and remarking that a double-decker bus entirely full of police officers had just gone by.
I mean, it is pathetic.
You could wait years for that, couldn't you?
Well, you could. I mean, presumably three of them come at the same time, and then, you know. The other great thing, I suppose, is that it allows the pomposity of the press to fulfil itself marvellously. I saw Robert Peston was moaning at the weekend that he was upset at the response he got from the Prime Minister when he asked him if he was a practising Catholic, as if that was in any way relevant to the world.
Oh, I don't mind people asking. To me, it's actually an interesting question. But I have to say that I'm not sure I recognise Robert Peston in the street. I long ago gave up watching this stuff. And I used to watch television news all the time and listen to the radio. And I just find the effort is simply not justified by the reward.
No, it's really not.
Who are these people? Why should I care what they think about the news? They've got almost everything I can think of wrong now for so long that it really isn't particularly...
I know. Well, listen, you are cheering me up at the very least. Let's talk about your column this weekend. You wrote about a bakery that shut down, and while you were not entirely sure that it was just down to COVID, I mean, clearly that is having an effect now. And as we now know, there will be people who hear this press conference this afternoon at 6 o'clock who will be tearing their hair out.
Well, it's very seldom going to be just down to COVID, is it? I mean, I did what journalists should do. I rang up the bakery and I said, "Why have you closed?" Mm. And when I suggested that COVID was involved, they got very tetchy and said, "No, not that." But
right.
I've watched that place for years, and there are problems with the Oxford Covered Market, which are not of interest to your non-Oxford readers. But the truth is that I can't imagine the long shutdown of that beautiful, airy, spacious market, when supermarkets were allowed to open in the height of the lockdown last year, I can't imagine it didn't badly affect every business in it.
Yeah,
and that effect accumulates. It's very seldom one thing that kills a business. Businesses, people who run businesses, for whom I have tremendous admiration because of what they have to go through, they're constantly being assailed by higher rents, higher taxes, more regulation, more interference, and a general non-cooperation by their landlords and their suppliers. It's an endless struggle. To have a shutdown on the grounds of public health dumped on top of all that would seem to me to be pretty likely to be fatal to a fairly large number of businesses which might otherwise have struggled on for some time.
Well, exactly right. And while we're on the subject of Oxford, I mean, it has been in the news quite a bit lately. I see that the only reason now that they're not going to take down the statue of Cecil Rhodes is that it seems to have been part of an integral building works. So it's part of the building. They can't take it down, which is, I suppose, good news for all racists in the world.
Oh, let me be completely frank with you. I couldn't care less if that statue comes down. It's quite ugly. It looks like the statue of a bookmaker.
Yeah. Well, you can't even really see it anyway. You have to sort of look up, don't you?
You could go past it time and time again. I'm a great looker up while I'm in Oxford because it's fascinating. You see lots of things. It's not very far from it. There's a sculpture of a rotting corpse on the front of another building, which I've never noticed. But there is old Cecil. And I don't really care whether he's there or not. The only reason that I just object to the idiotic belief that by tearing down statues of this kind, you'll in some way make the world better.
Mm.
But it's any excuse. I think they've come up with a planning excuse, partly because the government, as the Tory government, having realised that for 20 years or so it's been insulting everybody with conservative opinions in the country, has got this new anti-woke policy.
Mm.
Where it actually vaguely says things which are not totally approving of taking the knee. and it's planning people support the Oriel College in not taking down the Rhodes statue. This is opposed as much as everything else that it does is. They don't really mean it. Just for the moment, the climate has changed a bit. There were some very big anti-Rhodes demonstrations in Oxford last year. I haven't seen any sign of them.
No. The latest...
People didn't really care.
Well, the latest is the Dons all saying they're going to go on strike, which probably is a good thing, in my view, saying that if it's not removed, they're not going to teach the students.
I just think that is so petty, and I'm not sure that a university could really accept, if it was a serious university, could really accept any of its teachers refusing to teach the students there on the grounds of a political prejudice against the college they attend.
Yeah.
Imagine that being reversed in a conservative way, and imagine the enormous rally. I don't know who these people think they are, frankly. Mm. If your job is to teach the next generation, then you teach them.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what college they go to or what statue might appear on the front of that college. It's not actually as if the undergraduates of Oriel College have any say in that at all.
Well, exactly right. Stay with us, Peter, if you would. I want to talk to you about identitarians. I think that's what they're now called, because there's a bit of football to mention as well.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. We're talking to Peter Hitchens from the Mail on Sunday. Peter, in your column you wrote about Nick Robinson referring to, I think it was an actress, as an actor, thereby betraying his kind of his woke roots, if you like.
Well, I think most normal people do still use the term actress. I have no doubt that in time it will be driven out of public life. But for the moment, that's when, if you're asked what Kate Winslet is, you'll say she's an actress. But The Guardian for some time and various other left-wing outfits have been promoting the terminology actor for actors and actresses alike. And I just noticed that Nick Robinson on a Radio 4 item the other day both called her an actor and also referred to her as Winslet with no miss or miss or anything. Now, I was trained in journalism that you only use someone's surname without an honorific if they were a convicted criminal.
Yes.
And it was quite rude to use Winslet. But again, the Guardian pioneers this, and the left-wing publications in general. I just get tired of people telling me all the time, oh, well, the BBC is really right-wing. Look at Nick Robinson. He was a young conservative once, a phrase which always sounds to me like thin pig or quiet rock concert.
Right. Well, so is Boris Johnson.
Whether he was or not, I don't know, but he seems to... I just thought it was worth pointing out that he'd adopted the terminology of The Guardian, which is what everybody at the BBC reads and where they all get their ideas.
Well, I thought you might enjoy this addendum to that, which is that over the course of the weekend when the football was on, which you may or may not have watched any of, notwithstanding the taking of the knee scenario, they've now changed the phrase man of the match to star of the match, because obviously... they don't want to be too gender-specific about men playing football.
Well, no, we can't have that, can we? Because obviously, in all these guys... I mean, I don't watch it, but I'm so vaguely aware of the fact that whenever it happens, it seems to be entirely composed of men.
Yeah.
The other one was
ITV. ITV's coverage yesterday, they had the woman whose name I don't know, I'm afraid, but who is the women's Chelsea football team manager... and they captioned her as Chelsea manager. So I was sitting in a room with some people, and one of them said, is she the Chelsea manager? I said, no, she's not the Chelsea manager. She's the Chelsea women's team manager. But they can't say that, because obviously that would be, in some way, unfair.
Because the two things are the same. Yeah, it happens all the time. I mean, I was in church yesterday, and the word, in the very ancient prayer in the 1662 prayer book, the word man was changed to person by a minister of religion. And you get this thing on the railway that if something's gone wrong with the signals, they no longer refer to the signalman, which of course is the phrase which we all grew up with, and I've no doubt appears in Thomas the Tank Engine and all the other places. It's the signaller. But when I hear the word signaller, I tend to think of soldiers.
Yes.
Wild signalling with semaphore flags or flashing or all this lamps. And it confuses me completely when they refer to it. I don't even know if there are any female signallers on British railways, but they have to call them signallers just in case there are.
Right.
We are supposed, I think, by all these terms, we're supposed to be stupid. The whole basis, if you can't cope with the idea that, that man might be used for the whole of mankind, including women.
Yeah, like chairman.
It's not so much the fiddling with the language that annoys me, it's the assumption that I'm so stupid that when I use mankind, I'm actually making an anti-woman or sexist. Yeah.
I know. Well, I found a new sign yesterday, which will please you, I think. I was picking up my children from a railway station, and on said railway, it's one of those old-fashioned railway stations in Sussex, where they've got, you know, it's an outdoor thing, and there's got a couple of benches and stuff. And one of the benches has three seats, and on the furthest left of the seats, there's a sign that says, out of use, please keep your distance. Now, it doesn't make sense to me, because what I didn't realize, when I read the sign, I didn't know if the whole bench was out of use or just the third seat. And if the third seat is the one that's out of use, that means surely the two people sitting to the right of it are too close together. Shouldn't the middle one be out of use?
You'd think so. but again, you're doing this very foolish thing of applying reason and common sense to a circumstance where, in fact, what we are still engaging in is a complete national bang. I said again, the Hitchens quotient. How many people are roaming the streets in the open air wearing face coverings? Continues to rise. And yeah. There are huge numbers of them. I think even when everyone's forgotten what COVID is, they'll still be doing it.
Yeah.
Because they like it. And it makes them feel safe. And here we have it. Again, the terror has been spread. People are afraid. They're enjoying being afraid. And they're jolly well going to carry on.
Yeah. Well, my children...
You and I may think that the continued shutdown for however long it is will be announced tonight is ludicrous and futile. But there are millions of people who are perfectly happy to accept, well, if it saves one life, and they'll continue to do it. Because apart from anything else, people simply have not begun to understand. And the level of particular economic education in this country is so low, it makes me look clever. They simply have not begun to understand the profound cost of this.
No.
Way in which that cost will be taken out on them.
Mm. But also the effect, and I'll leave you with this one, which my kids told me when they came off the train, that they'd seen a terrible thing at the previous station where an old lady who was clearly in her 80s, if not even older, got up to get out of the train at the previous station with a Zimmer frame. She asked a couple who was sitting next to the door if they would help her to get out of the train. The man said, apparently, fully masked up, when was the last time that was sanitised? Meaning the Zimmer frame.
Oh, no.
And so they very kindly, and I'm glad I brought them up properly, he refused to help her. So they helped her to get out of the train. But, you know, that's what we're dealing with.
Oh, how awful. That's so sad.
Isn't it, just?
I'm sure, oddly enough, that the people who do this are in normal circumstances perfectly kind. But again, they're so bound up with this fear that such a tremendous fatal plague is raging amongst that they actually become unkind. That's what fanaticism does to people.
Yeah, it does. And I'm sorry, because
that's
actually
an incredibly sad story.
It really is. But you've spent the last half an hour cheering me up, Peter, and I'm sorry to end it on a low point, but thank you for that. I feel less angry
stay
now.
Stay pessimistic and you'll stay.
You should rent yourself out as a cheerer upper. That's another job you never thought you'd have. Nice to talk to you. See you next week. Peter Hitchens, Mail on Sunday columnist. I do actually feel better having spoken to Peter, not because I'm going to be pessimistic, not because I'm not angry anymore, because I'm still angry, because people are angry today, and it's what we should be, I believe.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's talk to Rob Ashton-Kane, Product and Customer Service Manager at Hargreaves & Nurse Holidays. Rob, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Mike. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you again. Now, I should remind people that you kind of specialise in villas and holidays in sort of islands in the Mediterranean, Sardinia, Corsica, that kind of thing. Right. What's been happening since you and I spoke last, which was probably a lot longer ago than I remember?
Well, in a nutshell, nothing positive, very much negative. Firefighting, basically. Dealing with, I mean, you've sort of hit the nail on the head with what you just said there. People are just fed up. They've no longer got any confidence about going on holiday because of all the rigmarole that they've got to go through when they get back. And then even now we are sensing that even if the islands that we feature are figured on a green list, what's to say that whilst they're on holiday, won't go back to the amber?
Well, what people have now seen, because they saw, I mean, what's even more galling, I think, to people, and I said this at the start of the show, is that, you know, we were told by Grant Shapps and other members of the cabinet that the reason why Portugal was put on the amber list was to safeguard June the 21st so that we could reopen the economy. That's not happening now. So if no. I had been affected by that, I'd be suing these people.
If only it was possible. This is the problem that we've got here. That I mean, you use the word, so I will dare to use the word. We are being lied to.
Yeah.
We were told that this traffic light system that was introduced on the 17th of May was intended to, quote, open up international travel.
Yeah.
And it hasn't, basically. All it's done is, instead of making it illegal, it's making it completely improbable.
Yes.
And impractical, frankly.
Yes. And I mean, I wonder sometimes as well, Rob, as you must do, is their intention simply to make it so complicated for people to go anywhere that people will just give up and they won't bother?
Absolutely. That is absolutely my opinion. Yeah. It's they can't be seen to say you can't go on holiday. Right. So, you know, we're the caring, sharing government. You can if you want, but you probably better haven't.
Right. Yeah, because it's one, too difficult, two, too expensive, and three, it might all go wrong while you're away. And I mean, in terms of your sort of your areas that you service, what are the sort of figures in those areas? Because I assume if they're relatively small islands, which they are, the cases aren't that high, are they?
I would use the word negligible, both in terms of the infection rates, the hospitalisation rates, no deaths.
Mm.
You know, it's a hell of a lot safer to come to Corsica, Sardinia and Sicily than it is to stay in the UK, frankly.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm thinking of emigrating, Rob, if it carries on like this. You know, I may not be coming for a couple of weeks. I might be coming for a few years.
Not a problem.
I mean, you know, so I mean, but as a business owner and as a man who needs business to make a living, how are you coping?
Well, I think I speak for the industry in general that this cannot go on for much longer, simply because we have no cash flow. People, even if we only work on very small deposits, for example, when people book a holiday, people are just not booking holidays.
Yeah.
When it comes to paying their balances, they're saying, well, I don't really want to travel. Can I postpone? Can I cancel? Etc. Etc. So, you know, we like everybody else in the business, yes, we are getting some support from the government. I'm not going to lie. But the problem is that is not what we do. We have to trade. And at the moment, we can't trade because people just will not go on holiday.
Yeah,
and
but also
we can't really blame them, to be honest.
And the biggest problem, I think, and I mean, I don't know whether it's the same for your business, but all the people in hospitality that I know who were getting some help from the government when they were closed, all of them said, without any exaggeration, that the money they got from the government did not cover their costs in any way, shape or form. You know, it was something and they were grateful for that, but it wasn't enough, really. And so they've had to go into debt as a result, and they're now trying to make it back. But the other problem is, I'm assuming there would have been people booking holidays maybe, I don't know, a month ago after May the 17th, when they thought June 21st was a good date. Because the one thing you know is that once the school holidays kick in, it all gets a bit expensive. If you can go, you know, like back end of June, it's a bit cheaper.
Yeah. No, we did see a peak in or a spike in inquiries when they announced the traffic light scheme, thinking that, okay, well, yes, at the moment it's amber, but there's a review due in June. So by that time, because of all the infection rates going down and down, then it'll be safe. We'll book something for the end of June.
Mm.
And of course, those people that have then said, well, actually, no, I don't want to go. I can't go. I'm not going to go through all this quarantine, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they're then faced with the stark choice of either postponing it to next year or cancelling. And the problem that we have is that, you know, we get criticised for being the nasty tour operator that's ripping people off, not just us, but the tour operator in business in general.
Right.
What people don't seem to appreciate is that we have obligations to the hotels that we book the holidays with, and they are basically saying, I don't care if you're coming from the UK, everybody else can come on holiday. So, sorry, you don't come, you lose your money.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm looking at flights, for example. I mean, this is how far away people are looking. October half term. Which might be, you know, under some strange alchemy possible to do. Do you know how much they want for a flight to Tenerife? 950 quid per person.
There you go.
So family of four, that's already going to cost you $4,000 just for the flights.
Yeah.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, do people really want, nothing against Tenerife as a destination, but do people really feel that they want to spend $4,000 to go to Tenerife before they even get to whatever accommodation that they're choosing?
Well, exactly. That's the problem. And it's just such a horrendous scenario. I mean, have you had people who did book post June 21st coming on to you saying, look, we're going to have to cancel it?
Well, we've got lots of people. I mean, at the moment, we won't have anybody travelling in June.
Right.
So, you know, anybody that had holidays booked in May and June of this year have either postponed or cancelled. Obviously, there is a review due on the 24th of June about the traffic light system. But if we're all honest, we're not holding our breath and we're not hoping that that's, you know, holding out hope that that's going to change our destinations to green. And as I said before, even if it does, do people have the confidence that it won't just all of a sudden go back to the amber again, right, like they did in Portugal?
I know. It's an absolute nightmare. But I mean, ridiculous. I mean, you can't really go on like this, can you, Rob?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we appreciate the financial assistance that we're getting from the government. I'm not going to dispute that. But what we need is help from the government in getting the business back up and running again. We need some concrete dates. I mean, they keep going, oh, well, we're not being led by dates, we're being led by data. Well, that clearly is not true, because if that was the case, then they wouldn't have shut Portugal down.
Well, I mean, here's some data for you. A number of deaths yesterday, 8. How about that for data? You know.
Clearly, yeah. Overrunning the country by the looks of it.
I mean, you've probably got more people dying doing water sports in the Mediterranean on average summer. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know wish light of it, but I mean, I'm starting to get to the point where I'm kind of going, you know, something.
It's so frustrating. And I mean, you know, we wrote a letter to our local MP about this quite a few days ago, and we've not even had the acknowledgement of receiving the letter, let alone any constructive observation or assurance that he will look into it or whatever. It's just... I think one of the problems that the travel industry has got is that you've not seen plastered all over the news about big tour operator collapses due to COVID or you know, a tour operator travel agency goes out of business and the rest of it, because we're a very resilient industry and we've managed to survive this far. And I think we've become literally the victims of our own success. And the government think, well, you'll be all right. Don't worry about it. And then when we do stick our heads up and say we need help, we go, well, there isn't really anything we can do for you.
Well, we were told that the G7, I mean, anything I cared about coming out of the G7 was if they did some kind of a deal to open an air travel corridor between the US and the UK, you know, because at least there's somewhere you can go. But they didn't even do that. You know, all they did was went to the Bleeding Eden project and, you know, ate some turbot and watched the Red Arrows. It didn't seem terribly green to me.
No, well, and Boris turning up in his own private jet, the photo opportunity, that's hardly environmentally friendly, is it? No, yeah. I mean, I think one shouldn't pick out individuals, because I don't think there's any one individual in the government's to blame. I think it's the cabal that is causing this, and they're all sort of... that none of them dare criticise any of the others or speak out of turn, and if ever they dare do, then they get slapped down again. Yeah. And so, you know, there's no certainty in anything. It's the uncertainty which is the problem. Yes. People will not book a holiday if they don't know they can go on holiday. And clearly, you know, we can't invest. I mean, there's no point in us, for example, advertising our holidays, because we don't know whether anybody's going to be able to go on them anyway. So, is it money down the drain?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, is it worth looking at your website, Rob, or will I just get even more frustrated?
Please look at it and book. You know, we are flexible. People can book. Our terms and conditions are very, very flexible. We do understand the situation. We're members of ABTA, so we follow their code of conduct when it comes to people being advised not to travel by the FCDO. You know, is anybody really thinking about booking a holiday at the moment, unless they can have that confidence that they can go and they won't have to jump through all these hoops when they go home again?
Well, give yourself a plug since you're here.
Well, we are Hargreaves and Nurse, trading as Just Corsica, Just Sardinia and Just Sicily.
Okay.
Tailor-made holidays for people from the 2-star, 3-star hotels right up to 5-star luxury villas. We're here. Give us a call. Come on our website. Come on holiday with us, please.
Yeah. All right. Good man. Rob, thanks very much for talking to us. Hopefully, I might see you soon. Rob Ashton-Kane. There's no absolute and utter hope for that right now, but I might just go and have a look just to make myself feel better, for heaven's sake.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Let's now speak to Stefan Kyriazis, who is the stage editor at the Sunday Express and the Sunday Mirror, because one of the big stories of last week, which may now come to pass, if indeed what we expect Boris Johnson to say at 6 o'clock actually is said, Andrew Lloyd Webber said last week that he needs to open his theatres fully. He needs to be able to sell tickets to every single seat in the theatre. And he says he's going to open them no matter what, come hell or high water, on June the 21st. So even if Boris Johnson says he can't, he's going to do it and he's going to risk getting arrested. Stefan, very good afternoon to you.
Hello, hi, good afternoon.
I'm hearing basically that the figure for most theatres is around about 75 to 80% full before they start really making proper money. So at the moment, with only, I think, somewhere between 25 and 50% availability, they're not making money.
No, this is the massive issue. And what's been happening at the moment is we've had some smaller shows opening already, but they're shows that either have very little staging, a smaller orchestra, or even a live backing track. So these don't involve massive overheads, but any of your classic big public pleasing, we dream of tourists coming back, these massive London shows, they can't return with smaller audiences.
No. And the funny thing at the moment, Stefan, as well, and you'll know this better than me, is that you walk around the West End, particularly Covent Garden and where a lot of theatres are, it's still pretty quiet. I mean, is there even enough demand for those tickets to be sold? Because there's no tourists here.
Well, this is very true. It's getting busier. And I have to say, I went to the opening night of Here Come the Boys and I came out at Oxford Circus. And I promise I'm not spinning this or PRing London. It felt pretty normal to me outside that kind of busy part of Oxford Circus. Mm. It was packed and there were people on the streets. Obviously, there were a lot of people coming in for the theatre. So there are people around. There's absolutely not enough tourists, and also out of towners, you know, whether it's domestic or international tourists.
Yeah, right.
This crucial for London theatre.
Absolutely. And what's the status at the moment, for example, of all the people that work in the business? Because, you know, people think of the people on stage, but there are so many people backstage, behind the stage, selling tickets, you know, people who are ushers, people who are selling drinks at the bar. I mean, it's a huge industry.
It's dire. It's absolutely desperate. And this is outside theatres as well. The whole argument for the power of theatre is you bring people into the city, whether it's London or anywhere across the country. It's not just even the theatre people. This actually knocks on everywhere. But within the theatre, what's happening again is obviously you still have some of these performers that are able to get out and perform now. But the bigger shows, the ones that require backstage crew, hair and makeup people, the people that do the sets, the people that do the lighting, absolutely all the box office, there's no work for them, especially with the smaller shows again.
Right.
And they are not able to be furloughed. These people cannot be furloughed. Mm. They're self-employed. It's desperately bad for them.
It's really awful, isn't it? And is it the same pretty much around the world? Is anything opening up? What's New York like?
New York has said that they're going to reopen in September. And September, they're opening at full capacity. But obviously, that for them is an even longer gap until they've reopened. So they've got absolutely the same situation. I have friends in New York. I was over there to see a show about 80, just before lockdown. Mm. Met some really gorgeous people. And little by little, they were leaving New York. One of the girls I know, she's gone back to Texas. A massive drain on the creative center. And New York is obviously Manhattan for them as well.
Right. It's absolutely sort of shocking. It's quite sad, really. And do you think Andrew Lloyd Webber will make this promise good? Do you think that if we, as we expect, Boris Johnson will say, well, you know, it's going to have to be another 4 weeks. Do you think Andrew will actually just open up and take his chances?
I can't speak for Andrew Lloyd Webber. And obviously then you'll have a standoff with the government. But also, yes, this is all very well. The test is going to be the public. Mm. Will the public come? Andrew Lloyd Webber may very well say, absolutely, I'm opening up the theatres, but will people come as well? And we've seen so far that people are desperate to get out and get on the streets, but theatre audiences are still a slightly different prospect.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, he's not asking for sort of, you know, rogue theatres to be opened. He's asking for theatres to be opened with the proviso that everybody who goes in there takes a test, and if it's negative, then they can enter.
But then again, this is quite a it's not complicated, but it involves you going and getting a test.
Yes.
And that commitment from people as well. And I'm not sure that people still know how to do that, or would they do that?
Right.
When I spoke to Cameron McIntosh 2 weeks ago, he said that what's happening is very, very much, there's a lot of confidence. He said ticket bookings for the end of the year are pretty much at pre-COVID levels, which is extraordinary. It's fantastic.
Right.
But this in-between period at the moment, people are unsure what to do. So I mean, I wish Andrew Lloyd Webber every luck.
Yes.
But will people come as well?
No, I think you're right, because I think there are certain people who don't seem to mind. I mean, I personally have never taken a test. I don't really want to take a test to go somewhere. I just find that too much of an imposition, in the same way that I don't really want to take a test to get on a plane. And I'd rather just wait until it's all, you know, as far as I'm concerned, back to normal.
Yeah, no, I think this is going to be the crux of it. And also, it's your theatre audience, and that's families as well, and older people, and all those. And again, it's, you know, people at risk. So I don't know. I mean, I spoke to Michael Ball last week.
Yeah.
And they've got Hairspray about to open at the end of June as well. And he said, this is a full production. This is a full Broadway production, which involves all the crew, all the backstage. It cannot be done on reduced opening.
No. And can they rehearse that anywhere at the moment?
They have been rehearsing. They've absolutely been rehearsing. They have to rehearse in smaller groups, and they have to rehearse with masks and all the safety protocols. They have been rehearsing, but they're very, very nervous. And also, he said, you know, they're running out of patience. The theatre industry has obviously been very vocal, but also, this is from nice guy Mr. Michael Ball, who literally said, if this goes on, he said, we'll accept 21st, there's going to be a bit of a shuffling. He said, if it goes on for maybe more than 2 weeks, he said, the theatre industry will not forgive the government, and mainly the lack of clarity. This is the problem. People can't plan, so they you can't just open a show out of the blue.
No, and that's the issue with everything, isn't it? I mean, you can't just go on holiday tomorrow when they say, oh, no, you can go on holiday. Well, no, you've got, you know, kids at school. You've got people that you might want to go with. You've got friends who can't take time off work and all of that. And I see that Oliver Dowden in the Times today didn't exactly cover himself with glory down in Cornwall, because he apparently said after Jill Biden went to the Minak Theatre, that lovely open air sort of amphitheatre down there, that the government had saved it from having to close. It turned out that wasn't true.
No, well, there's been an awful lot of spin and an awful lot of possibly taking the credit for things that weren't necessarily. And even again, Michael Ball's comment was perhaps a little more acknowledgement of mistakes being made might have been nice as well. It's just ever shifting goalposts. And also this, you know, you have to remember this massive bailout money was a loan. It wasn't just an input of cash. This was a loan to the arts. This has got to be paid back. Not everybody got this money. And also shows can't get insurance. So this is a crucial thing, which people might not be aware of. You can't get insured at the moment to open a show against COVID and pandemic. Right. So if you open again and then you close again, people literally have been losing millions when the shows opened and closed, especially last December with that shambles about a week or two of we're going to have a wonderful Christmas and then they close shows. People lost their own money and the government hasn't underwritten. They haven't made any comment or acknowledgement of this as well. And that's crucial moving forward.
Yeah, that's just horrendous, isn't it? Well, listen, Stefan, let's hope that there's some good news later on today. I'm not too optimistic, but let's hope it's all back to normal soon. Great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Stefan Kyriazis, stage editor at the Sunday Express and the Sunday Mirror. I mean, it's just ridiculous because, again, it's not just about people like Andrew Lloyd Webber. And I know many people will go, oh, well, he's got loads of money. It's fine. He hasn't actually, because he's mortgaged his home against the business that he's got. And don't forget, he's running a multi-million pound business which hasn't made any money for the best part of about 18 months, effectively, right? So imagine not making any money for 18 months. You know, yes, he might have been giving money to furlough some of his staff, but there's massive numbers of people in the theatre business and in the arts in general who are not on furlough, who have had to go and find other jobs. It's a bleeding shambles, I'm afraid, and it needs to stop. It needs to stop today.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.